But if that wasn't bad enough, his father, who was a good man but not too bright in emotional terms, immediately shipped the poor boy off to these boarding schools. And you've all heard about the terrible British boarding schools. And Lewis hated them. And from then on, there was always a sort of animosity between Lewis and his father that was never fully healed, really. The worst was Malvern College, where he endured the fagging system. Now, that has nothing to do with our slang word for homosexual. The fagging system is the older athletes who basically bully the younger people, the younger kids, and treat them like slaves. Now, most British love this because they go through it and then they bully. It's sort of like Hell Week in a fraternity. But Lewis hated this. Lewis was not athletic at all. He had fumbly hands and he hated this. He wanted to spend time reading and always he had a dread of this. And we're going to come back to it, by the way, in Lecture 8 and talk about the impact of this horrible boarding school that he hated. Finally, in 1914, Lewis found some relief when his father finally answered his pleas and sent him to a private tutor in Surrey, England. And his tutor's name was Kirkpatrick, although Lewis tended to call him Kirk or the old knock. And Kirkpatrick was an obsessively rational thinker who taught Lewis how to think and reason clearly. There's a wonderful story where Lewis first met Kirkpatrick. He was a teenager, and he wanted to make conversation. And so he said, you know, Surrey is less wild than I expected. You know what Kirkpatrick said? What do you mean by wild? What do you base your expectation on? And he kept questioning until Lewis realized he not only didn't know what the word wild meant, he had no idea what he was talking about. Now, most young children would be crushed by that and never speak again. To Lewis, it was mother's milk to him, and he loved it. And there's a great irony. Kirkpatrick was an atheist, and Lewis at this point was an atheist. But when he became a Christian, all of that rational, clear thinking Kirkpatrick taught him went to defend the Christian faith. This is the great irony here. So Lewis had a very interesting education, if you will. Lewis, under Kirkpatrick's tutelage, Lewis grew and he was a model student and he was accepted to Oxford University provisionally. He went to Oxford for a few months, but then along came World War I and Lewis voluntarily chose to fight. He didn't have to. And he was not an athletic man, but he believed it was his duty. And so he joined and he was actually wounded in action and returned later to finish his degree. Now, if there are those of you listening to me that hate mathematics, you're going to like this story. Lewis was brilliant in the humanities, but was not good at math. And he would never have passed the British version of the SATs in math. But because when he came back, he was a war veteran, they waived the test, and he went to Oxford. If it wasn't for that, he probably wouldn't have got in. So those of you that don't like math can have a sympathetic ear in Lewis and in his works. All right. He went through Oxford. He was an exemplary student, and he loved Oxford so much he wanted to stay there. There were other personal reasons I don't have time to go into, but he wanted to stay in Oxford, and he tried and tried to get a full-time teaching position. It took him a long time. For many years, he lived in near poverty. And again, it helped him to really become a sensitive kind of person to the needs of human beings. But finally, after several years, he was elected a fellow of Magdalen College. Now, it's spelled Magdalene, like Mary Magdalene, but the British, who knows why, pronounce it Magdalen, like being tearful. And he was a fellow of Magdalen College, and there he taught English for about 30 years. And he was lectured, and he was also a private tutor in the British tutorial system. But Lewis never was given a full professorship, and we may talk about that later. Now, many people don't know this, but the young Lewis, his greatest aspiration was to be a poet. And he's an okay poet, but he's not a great poet. He's interesting because he still believed in a sort of formal, traditional kind of poetry. And many people don't know this, but in the beginning, he did not like T.S. Eliot. Even though here are the two great Christian intellectuals, for a while he did not like T.S. Eliot because he didn't like modern poetry. They later reconciled and became somewhat of friends. But Lewis began as a poet, and he even had a couple books of poetry published, but they weren't really that well received. And Lewis really found his swing, if you will, in prose writing. But it's funny that he wanted in the beginning to be a poet. All right, I mentioned that he was at Oxford for 30 years or more. Let me tell you the highlights of his years at Oxford. As I mentioned before, when Lewis went to Oxford, he was a confirmed atheist, modernist, rationalist, naturalist, right down the row. Nope, if you met him now, you'd never think he would become the great Christian apologist, not only of the 20th century, but almost of all time. But when he went to Oxford, and this happened to my wife, by the way, when she went to college, it turned out that every person he met was a Christian, and every one of his favorite authors was a Christian, and it just sort of surrounded him, if you will. God sort of did a guerrilla tactic, if you will, on young C.S. Lewis. His two most important friends are J.R.R. Tolkien, and he, of course, is the author of the great Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Tolkien was a very devout Catholic, and those two were lifelong friends, and he really influenced Lewis to think about Christianity. Another friend was Owen Barfield, who's another quite famous writer. And Barfield was an atheist too, but became a Christian early on. And Lewis and Barfield wrote letters back and forth. They called it the Great War as they debated Christianity.